when you think of access control, just don't think of your residential address. So think of your building, think of your work. There's a big, big effort in the automotive industry today from the group, one of our liaison partners, the Car Connectivity Consortium. Mm-hmm. If you want to think of automotive as an IoT device, which it is, there's a very big trend towards digital keys or using NFC.
Welcome to Fnet Silica's We Talk IoT. We'll chat with innovators, experts, and business owners to learn how they are implementing IoT and using data to create new business opportunities. I am your host, Stephanie Ruth Haydock. Today, we are diving into the world of near-field communication, NFC, with Mike McKinnon, the executive director of the NFC Forum. The NFC Forum has been at the forefront of NFC innovation, pushing the boundaries of how this technology integrates with and enhances IoT solutions. From secure payments to seamless connectivity, join us as we explore the transformative power of NFC in our connected world, straight from the experts leading the charge. Welcome to the show, Mike. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you for having us. Thank you, Ruth. Good to meet you.
Would you like the chance to introduce yourself and the NFC Forum?
Yeah, sure. So, my name is Mike McKinnon. I have been in wireless standards on and off over my career over the past 20 or so years. I originally started this journey back at the time when I was at Intel around 2000, working on Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connected products. And actually was the first executive director for the Bluetooth Special Interest Group.
Cool.
And then after a long journey, actually went to nonprofit for a while, but ended up coming back into the tech sector. And when I did, I went back to wireless standards. And NFC is a great technology. It's actually quite mature. And I saw it as an opportunity to work with some great engineers and some great marketing organizations to make the technology even more successful. And so over these past couple of years, what we've really been looking to do is extend the footprint that we have already in payment. So when you go and make a payment with a mobile device, you're using some of our standards to do that. And the idea is that as digital wallet becomes more pervasive, individuals will have more reasons to use their mobile phone to basically interact with lots of devices in the world, access control and the like. And that's where we kind of get into IoT.
Cool. Yeah, I'm sure most of our listeners, I suppose, will know what NFC is, but probably just...
Well, maybe not. You know, it's one of the things that's really interesting is that, you know...
You don't realize that you actually use it maybe probably even every day, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And NFC is also a little bit more broad as well, because if you want to take a very technical view, near-field communications are a variety of different technologies. So there's the RAIN Alliance does what's called RFID. So like the tags in the shops for doing inventory, that's near-field communication. We don't do that. And then when you pay with a transaction card, when you go at the payment terminal, if you're using a regular card, that's not necessarily NFC form technology, but it is NFC technology. But when you go to pay with a wearable or your mobile phone, that is NFC form. But all of that is NFC transactions that are happening. And it's usually defined, although the RFID example is not this case, as very, very short range, very, very low power, with the ability to harvest power from the other device. So only one side needs to have a battery. And most NFC connections are about 2 centimeters and are, you know, very fast and very secure. And that's the one that customers are most likely to be familiar with is when they go to pay.
Yeah, I think with payment cards, it's even only 5 millimeters, right?
It's tricky. There's a whole bunch of different standards. And actually, one of the things that you'll notice as a consumer is there's two sides to that equation. So... And to use the terminology we would use is that there's a payment terminal, and that payment terminals, a lot of those payment terminals, at least the ones that I interact with, and especially if you're taking transit, a lot of those are optimized for very long distance. I mean, almost as much as 10 centimeters, very, very far away. Oh. And the reason why is because they want you to be able to move through the turnstile very quickly. But the idea is that the standard transaction on our side is only up to 2 centimeters, but it's actually very, very short range, but it just depends on how people have optimized. And what has happened is that in the marketplace, particularly on the terminal side, they have extended the range quite far, the operating volume, as we'd call it, to make it so that it can work very quickly when people are walking through and they want to pay with their phone as they're walking through the turnstile at the train station.
Yeah. You'd basically have your wallet or your wearable on you, and then you just walk through and the gate opens, right? Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, you have to hold it close. You know, you can't just like, you know, and you have to usually probably take it out of a bag or something. And, you know, one of the things that's always misunderstood, I think, about NFC in particular, and I see them all the time. In fact, I just read an article last night of, you know, the 15 things you should buy if you travel a lot to stay safe on the road or something like that. And inevitably, there's like 10 products that are RFID blocking, kind of like wallets and stuff like that. I think what's happening is that I don't know if those products are as necessary as they were in the past, because most people are provisioning their cards onto their phone. And so what I have found is that when I travel, and particularly if I'm just traveling short distances, I oftentimes will leave most of my credit cards, if not all of them, at home. And if it's provisioned on my mobile phone, most of those systems are reinforced with biometrics. So it's very, very difficult to get that information off of your phone. Whereas, you know, skimming them off your credit card, I think, is remarkably difficult. You have to be remarkably close to do it. But there's still an attack vector. So I would encourage people to think about if they've got credit cards and they're, you know, and if they have places where they can use contactless, I would absolutely provision them into the digital wallet. And that'll be a much more secure experience for them and a much more convenient one as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm really enjoying everything's now decluttered and you don't even have to have a backpack or a purse or a huge wallet with you anymore. I'm really enjoying that, especially tapping with my wearable. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. When you move to the watch, it becomes even a greater convenience.
Yeah. Although the movement is kind of like you, our listeners can't see me now, but you kind of have to twist your wrist a little bit.
Well, you know, it's one of the problems with where the screen is, and this can kind of lead into an IoT discussion. So like, you know, for instance, the example you've given is, so on most watches that have NFC for payment, the antenna is directly behind the screen, which is why you have to turn your wrist over to kind of get the antenna close to the payment terminal, if that makes, because it's not going to be able to go through your arm or anything like that. But then I saw this other problem, and this is a category where we haven't seen much traction yet. I think it will change over time. But most people, when they go to fly, when they're flying on an airplane, at the gate, you can use your phone to, you know, scan your QR code, you know, to get on the flight. But you have the same problem there that you have with the watch at payment terminal, because you it's a QR code and it has to be on the screen. So you walk up and you flip your phone upside down, and inevitably people don't align it correctly, or the screen goes to sleep, or there's all these other problems. Whereas the idea is, if you were to use NFC for that type of a situation, so you could have the ticket directly on the phone, you'd be able to, just like you'd go and still be able to see the screen, because the antennas on most mobile phones are on the back, would allow you to present it at the gate and then be able to get on. I did have that experience at a sporting event here in America, which is quite surprising. This is happening more quickly in Europe, but I went to a professional sports game, and at that particular event, they use NFC for entry to the facility. So I would tap with my phone and then get in, as opposed to using a QR code. Okay. It's much more convenient for all those reasons.
Yeah, making our way to IoT. Why are IoT and NFC better together?
Well, lots of reasons. You know, I would say that it's been somewhat of an interesting journey. So initially, most of the organizations that were looking to implement IoT with NFC were using it for provisioning. And this is the terminology that we would use for when you set up the device for the first time. This was prior to the pandemic. And I think the world has moved a little bit during that time, because what happened is people became incredibly familiar with QR codes. You know, when they went out to eat, or they went to the, you know, like to the restaurants or other places like that, QR codes were quite popular. And people began to become more, I would say, more comfortable or more familiar with QR codes. And QR codes are a very affordable way to do the provisioning concept, because the idea is you just put a sticker on the IoT device and you're kind of set. NFC and those types of products for that particular part of the solution are somewhat inconvenient because they do cost a little bit of money. They cost more than printing. Well, you get some benefits, but I mean, it's a little bit more expensive. And an IoT device, you're always looking to do that, to get rid of those costs. But as the world continues to change, the places where we're seeing some interest grow for IoT past this provisioning feature is around the wireless power, which I can talk about, and also some new work that we're doing around the digital product passport, where if you are a manufacturer or developer of IoT devices, you should be definitely keep an eye on this if you're going to sell your products in Europe. This coming regulation from the European Commission around the digital product passport. Mm-hmm. And our plans there in particular are to basically make that easier to do with NFC and actually enhance those feature sets. And let me circle back real quickly to the harvesting power concept. So when I was at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago, I was going around and talking primarily to lock vendors, so people that make door locks. And one of my basic questions were, are you using NFC today? And most of those vendors have some products now that have NFC. So the idea is you can just leave your keys at home. And when you get to your house, you can just tap on the door lock and verify your credentials and get in. And I've also verified that there are a number of companies also working on a way to increase the security of door locks by removing the IoT from them, if that makes any sense. So, mm-hmm. and also reducing the cost. And so the idea, the design of this type of a lock, which I expect to see by CES next year in the marketplace, is a lock that will be not connected to the internet, but it will use your mobile phone for that functionality. So the idea is that, and there will not be a battery, and there will not be a Wi-Fi connection. So the idea is when you walk up with your handset and you hold it close to the door lock will use the power from your phone to power up, verify your credentials, turn the lock, and then you pull your phone away and you'll be able to walk into the door. So the idea is that there will be no battery because you can use your phone, power harvesting using NFC. The other benefit you get from this is the fact that now if I'm a door lock manufacturer, I don't have to build a gigantic cloud infrastructure and all the security built into that because the lock doesn't have to be on the internet. The lock can simply be like a door lock today, which is I have to present my credentials at the point of, you know, where I'm getting into the device. Now, there's some things you lose. You know, you don't get like some of the history that you get with some of these, you know, IoT connected devices. You would also lose the ability, hey, Ruth, if you swing by my house and I want to unlock the door, not so easy. Now, I could probably save those keys from my wallet to you. So you'd have like a limited use key, but it wouldn't be stored in the cloud permanently, which is much more secure. And well, if you think about it, you know, I don't know how it works in Europe, but in America, if I want to get a key duplicated, I'll go to the hardware store and they'll cut a new key for me. But they don't keep a copy of the key there. Like I walk away with my key and they don't have a copy. And if you think about it, it's kind of crazy to think about it that now with IoT devices, all of these companies have our credentials. All of these companies have our credentials stored in the cloud, and every one of them is an attack vector. And it's a security threat. It's a privacy issue. There's all these issues. And so what I'm hearing is that some of these companies that are making door locks are looking at implementing an NFC in a way that would allow IoT devices to be disconnected and not have to be connected to the internet pervasively. You'd be able to use your phone. You take your phone, have a piece of software to configure it, you know, hold the phone close to it to make the settings. And then when you want to unlock the door, you would just hold your phone or watch next to your door lock to be able to get in.
That's cool. So that's the next big thing in the Internet of Things is that you don't have to connect everything anymore, but you disconnect everything.
Well, disconnect some of it some of the time. The idea is that having a pervasively connected device has many benefits. Mm. And I know that I have a camera on the front of my house that's very convenient for me to check while I'm away. But there are other devices where it may not, by the way, be valuable to the customer. It might also allow you to, as a product manufacturer, enter new markets because the devices would be such more affordable to make and sell to markets, which will also lead to an increase of more IoT devices. The idea is it's the unconnected IoT use cases is one of the ones that we're looking at. It still doesn't mean you have to build it that way. It's just would allow you to build those features into the product if a customer wanted it.
Can you share some more use cases? So locksmiths or smart home appliances?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another thing that's coming as well. So when you think of access control, just don't think of your residential address. So think of your building. Think of your work. There's a big, big effort in the automotive industry today from the group, one of our liaison partners, the Car Connectivity Consortium. Mm-hmm. If you want to think of automotive as an IoT device, which it is, there's a very big trend towards digital keys using NFC. And I will tell you, that's also got another interesting little nuance there that would be of interest to your listeners. A lot of companies, when they originally did wireless keys, obviously they used the private key fobs, and that's a different category. But as people started just using standards, some car manufacturers started using Bluetooth, which is a great technology. I worked on it, 20 years ago. I mean, I'm a big, big, big fan of the technology. But one of the disadvantages of Bluetooth is it requires power. So imagine you've been out for the day and a better example is you take your car to the train station, you ride into the city, you do your day's worth of work, you're on the way home, train, you get to the car park, and now you're ready to get into your car. And now you've got your phone on battery reserve because you've used up all the power. Well, NFC still works in that use case. So when I walk up to the car and hold my phone, the reverse of what I just was describing with the phone powering the door lock, the car powers your phone to unlock the car so you can get in. Mm-hmm. And then you set the car down on the charging station, and then it becomes your digital key to start the car. And so the Car Connectivity Consortium has actually mandated NFC for this particular use case, which is if you have, one, to get into your car, even if you have no power. Because all these companies, by the way, will also be doing ultra wideband and Bluetooth and all these other things. But all of those technologies require you to have power. And so, whereas in the case of NFC, you don't have to have power in the device. So all of us are pretty familiar with Qi. So the wireless power that you use for powering your mobile phone. Okay. Mm-hmm. The NFC Forum has been collaborating with the Wireless Power Consortium on a couple of interesting features. The first one is if you buy a newer handset or newer charger that are Qi 2 certified, they have foreign object detection features built into that technology. So 5 years ago, if you had one of those little wallets on the back of your phone where you put your mm-hmm. credit cards and you set it down on a Qi charger, oftentimes it would ruin your credit cards because it would burn them because there's power going through. Foreign object detection in the new Qi standards prohibits that from happening. So what happens is it goes and looks and says, okay, do I see something in between like a NFC card, like your credit card, and it won't charge. It won't let you charge because the idea is it's doing foreign object detection. So that's one of the parts of our collaboration. Cool. The other one is they recently announced at CES, this was also a big feature of their booth, is a new wireless standard they're working on for kitchen appliances, and it's called Qi, K-I. And this is for very, very high power. Think of like your coffee pot or even a cooktop, or they had like a griddle that they were cooking waffles on or whatever. Well, NFC is built into that standard as well, because the thing you don't want to do is set something down on your kitchen counter and have it like begin sending power and, burn up something. So it uses NFC to, again, check to see, okay, let's handshake and make sure that there really is a key-enabled product sitting on top of this, and then it turns on the power. Cool. The other thing that this particular use case also highlights that would be important for IoT vendors is you can also use NFC in another use case is when you want to build an authentication. So let's suppose that you make a product and you only want it to work with your other product or a licensed product of your category. Well, you could use NFC to do handshake between those two devices when they try to start up. And if it says, hey, are you real or not real? And if you're not real, then you could not even power up. So it's another way for vendors to kind of protect, the IP and whatever else they might have in the ecosystem and protect their profits as well. So there's a lot of different use cases that are coming down the road, and some of them that are already real, of course.
We will take a short break. Stay with us. We will be hearing from our guests very shortly. This podcast is brought to you by Avnet Silica, the engineers of evolution. We help you bring secure, intelligent, and connected products to market. If you want to learn more about us, we have put information and links in this episode's show notes, and you can also connect with us on LinkedIn or avnet-silica.com. That's avnet-silica.com. There's just so many opportunities for vendors to make interesting business models out of this technology, isn't it?
Yes, it's really exciting.
What challenges do you see for NFC adoption?
Yeah, I would say that the biggest challenge generally is cost. And I think just lack of understanding by vendors. Well, I mean, it's always hard in a market to get people to change their behavior. And QR codes are very convenient and they're very useful, but they have their limitations. They provide some interesting user challenges. They only store a limited amount of information. So I think it's really up to the NFC Forum to do as much as we can to educate the market about the capabilities of the technology. And, you know, we kind of go through the process of, you know, this is a connection that customers are already familiar with. It's already built into your mobile phone that you already own today, more than likely. You know how to use it. You don't have to line the camera. It's relatively affordable. And it's going to get you a path to the digital product passport as well in the future. So the hope is that between all of those use cases, we'll be able to overcome some of the challenges in the market. To me, it's cost and knowledge, and it's up to us to share the information so that people understand that.
Sure, yeah. Probably not a very good marketing slogan, but I suppose the pandemic helped a lot with adoption as well, at least for some laggards.
I think that the pandemic changed a lot about the world. And one of the things that it did change is it got more customers, primarily in the West, by the way, more comfortable with contactless payment. You know, if you look in Europe, at least 2 years, we do a semi-annual study, and the next one will be out here shortly this year with ABI. And when we studied it 2 years ago, actually the UK in Europe was probably the fastest adopter of contactless. And I don't remember who was in second place in terms of adoption. But one of the things that was driving that adoption in the UK in particular was transit. So they had already kind of standardized on NFC, open loop payment on transit. So that really does move. Whereas as you know, in other European countries, a lot of times the transit is more regional and municipal based. And so there's not like one person makes a decision and the whole thing falls over kind of a thing. Japan was very much that way too. You know, one JR East, JR is the train organizer of all of the country, and JR East has Tokyo. And so they make the decision and everyone ends up, you know, going along for the ride. Mm-hmm. But America was very slow to take up contactless payment.
Oh, really?
Very, very slow. Oh, very, very slow. Mm-hmm. I think it was because we've always been kind of behind on the payment technology. So Magstripe came out and then chips came out and then NFC. And so there was like a long succession of like chain transitions for people. And we were very slow to take on chips, and that kind of slowed down us on all those paths. And I will also tell you, and this is still true today, some of the biggest retailers in America do not take contactless payment at all. I mean, that would be someone like in the United States, like Walmart, you know, one of the biggest retailers in the country has made a business decision not to do that. And it's partly because of the cost. You know, it's a very, very expensive endeavor to upgrade all your terminals.
Sure. Yeah, you have more people and more stores as probably a country in Europe has. Yeah, sure.
More stores, more payment terminals. Exactly. And there is some friction in the market. The credit card issuers, the service companies like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and retailers that don't want to pay high service fees. So there's a little bit of that friction baked into kind of the adoption of contactless. Okay. I would say that generally speaking, though, the pandemic definitely changed the trajectory of that. And again, like I said, we'll see our results here in the next couple of weeks. But from what we've seen so far, I mean, pretty much everyone uses contactless pretty universally around the world. And we're really excited about what's coming in the future. This kind of goes outside of IoT. But one of the other features you can use NFC for in a mobile handset is for doing not just, you know, acting like a card, but you can also read NFC tags as well. And there's a use case that's kind of brewing right now and has some early adoption in some countries today around using your mobile phone as a payment terminal. So there's a couple of terms like, you know, they call it COTS, like common off-the-shelf handsets, or soft POS, or there's a bunch of different solutions that are out there or different words for the same thing. But the idea is you install software on your mobile phone and it becomes a payment terminal. And so the idea is that this particular use case I think is going to be quite disruptive. It's going to allow retailers, at least in high-end shops, to get out from behind the counter and go to the customer and actually just do the transaction right when the customer selects the sweater. They can just transact and just, you know, tap and then they're out, as opposed to having to take it back to the terminal, you know, at the counter and do the transaction there. And then finally, we also think this might be a really interesting opportunity for the entire payment ecosystem, because it will allow us to kind of really begin to address some of the needs in the developing economies of the world where they don't have fixed line access, because we tend to forget, you know, in the West and in developed economies is that, you know, we have fixed line infrastructure. So there's an internet connection in every shop so they can do their payment terminals. But if in places where there's not, you know, fixed line access or permanent kind of connections, I can now, any place I have a mobile phone connection, which is virtually anywhere on the planet, except for probably some places in Antarctica, you can actually be able to take payment transactions on a mobile phone. We think this will even further push out more contactless use cases and more ways for customers to interact using NFC and all the devices that are in their life. And the key back to this, you know, kind of steer it back to IoT, is that when you think about your product, ask yourself, if a customer is the customer I'm trying to target going to have a mobile phone with them frequently, because they'll probably have their digital wallet, okay, that's built into their phone. Mm-hmm. And what could I do with a digital wallet with my device if they're using it a lot? Now, if I built an IoT device where I'm not going to be connecting to it very often with my mobile phone, it may not make much sense. But in cases where I will have my mobile phone, I'll be close to it, there might be an interesting opportunity for IoT vendors to look at how they can leverage the digital wallet and NFC to increase their profitability and find new customers.
Fascinating. I especially love the soft point of sale use case. Yeah. I keep frequently mentioning this in the podcast. I do travel to Eastern and Southern Africa a lot, and they're just way ahead of our European and Western mobile finance infrastructure. It's incredible. Yes. You have 5G in the Serengeti, and I can pay with my Vodacom M-Pesa mobile money to buy a beer while elephants roam around me. And I'm just like, it's just incredible. Yeah, because as you said, they skipped basically the evolution of fixed lines and went straight to mobile innovation. And obviously also for a lot of small and medium businesses would be a terrific innovation, I guess.
Yeah, well, Ruth, I will tell you, my experience is somewhat dated because it was about 7 years ago, and we could do a whole other podcast. when I said I was in the nonprofit sector for a brief time, I worked for an organization called water.org, and we did water and sanitation in developing economies. And so India and Africa, Haiti, places like that. I did an immense amount of travel in the developing economies between 2009 and 2015. And one of my eyes was for how could we use technology to improve access to water and sanitation for people. And there was all kinds of really interesting work that was being done, like you said, in the field, particularly in parts of Africa with mobile currency. And in fact, in places like Haiti, which is crazy, they were using minutes as currency. So you could actually go buy minutes on the street corner, then like sell minutes to other people who want to buy something from like a street vendor. It's pretty crazy. You know, it is fascinating. And I do want us to always remember, as you've already seen as well, Ruth, is that, you know, when we build technology, there's probably, 2 billion of us humans that live in, you know, developed economies, but that means there's another 5 billion that don't. And in fact, their lives could probably be more enriched by technology than us in the West having, you know, faster scrolling times on things like Facebook in real ways, you know. And we were looking at, you know, being able to share pricing information for when you want to buy water from, you know, kiosks. But I'm really excited about the way that maybe NFC might play a role. Now, these things don't happen, you know, overnight, but like you say, these economies don't have fixed line infrastructure. And so by being able to use the mobile phone for some of these things, I think it will be very disruptive.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. So we are already looking ahead. So what are some other emerging trends or future developments we should be looking out for regarding NFC?
So the NFC Forum, we spent about a year and a half working on a technology roadmap, like a 3 to 5 year roadmap. And there are 5 initiatives that we have underway that are going to affect the future of NFC solutions. The first one, we already talked a little bit about wireless power. Our current implementation allows you to do negotiated power up to 1 watt. We're looking to extend it out to 3. That'll keep it below the Qi standard, but it will be much more power for some of these integrated devices. And that work is currently underway inside of the forum. The next one's around range extension. So you mentioned it. We are at 5 millimeters is our range, up to 2 centimeters at some times, but we don't certify out to 2. It's only 5 millimeters. And so right now we're working on range extension as a way to make products more usable, so you don't have to align the antennas so precisely. We also think users will experience a slight speed increase because the connection can start earlier and continue longer in terms of when the device comes close and moves away. We're working on device-to-device connectivity. This goes back to the soft POS use case because we think there's some opportunities there. Another item on the roadmap is what we call multipurpose tap. And this doesn't necessarily really help, I don't think, in IoT, although I probably should think more about it because there are probably some great use cases for it. But the initial use cases we've been talking about is when you go to pay for something to have more than one thing happen at the time that you tap. So imagine you go today when you go to buy something that, like, say, a Boots, a MediaMart, and you have a loyalty card, that's usually QR code. So you have to, like, out of that transaction, you know, provide your QR code and then, you know, get your phone, like all these different steps. And we are looking at a way to allow you to tap one time so that your loyalty card can go at the same time. So the idea is that multiple things can happen with one tap from your digital wallet.
I never have a coupon.
Well, a coupon, or maybe have a special, or like on transit, having a special rate if you're maybe be disabled, yes, or if you're old, or if you're a veteran, or there's all kinds of other opportunities around price rating that might change your rate. And you could do all that at the same time, mm-hmm, as opposed to having to do it in two separate steps. So that's another work. And then the last one I already kind of mentioned is we're extending our common data format, which is called NDEF, which is NFC data exchange format. We're looking at extending that to be able to be used for the DPP, for the Digital Product Passport effort. And I kind of touched on this earlier, but as I mentioned, mm-hmm, the European Commission is going to be mandating at some point in the future that all products have to have a connection to the cloud with a unique identifier that tells a consumer, how was that product built, what materials are in it, how it can be recycled, all that kind of stuff. And with the NFC forum, we're looking at ways to enable that using an NFC connection. So if you already have NFC built into the product, you don't have to put a sticky QR code, ugly thing on the outside of your product. You can just keep it clean and put the NFC chip inside of it. Hmm. And then the other thing, it also, by the way, protects from the environment, all that in terms of like not getting dirty or scratched off or thrown away, worst case. But we're also looking at ways to build a specification that allows people to embed that data directly in the product. So it wouldn't even be not just in the cloud, but also on the product as well. And the idea here is that that would help regulators to do fraud detection. It'll allow consumers to be able to, you know, just use their handset and just tap on it and get the information without having to have a cloud connection. And most importantly, at the very end of life, when these products go into the recycling, you know, food chain, if you will, not all those places, as you know, are not closely connected to the internet. So having that data directly on the device will also provide some benefits there as well. So those are the five big issues around what we're working on the roadmap these days.
Oh, that's exciting. I will be happy to see it evolve in the future, yeah, I suppose. Yeah. What advice would you give developers and innovators who are now looking to integrate NFC into their IoT technology? How should they start?
Well, I think there's a couple ways to get going. Clearly, you know, the NFC forum is a great resource. You know, certainly come to our website. You can become a member. If you're a paying member, you can download specifications for free. So if you want to get that deep into it. If you go and look at our membership, you know, kind of the highest levels of membership in terms of like our sponsors and principals, those are most of the companies that build silicon for our marketplace. So if you are planning to put NFC into your product, now there's a number of different companies that build the chipsets that are, you know, you can kind of easily find who those might be. And then we also have on our website our labs, the organizations that will test your products to make sure that they are certified and they do work as the customer would expect and are interoperable. And then, of course, we also have member meetings, which is a great networking opportunity for people to come and meet. You know, you want to meet someone from, say, Apple or one of these big companies. You know, it's really hard as a small company, but if you come to a member meeting, oftentimes you can catch them at the coffee stand and be able to have a quick conversation. So you never know. And we do have those meetings twice a year. So just go to our website to find out more. Mm-hmm. And for your European listeners, we do have that every year in Europe. And then we alternate between Asia and Americas on the other meeting that we have every year. So two member meetings a year, the website, and then the community that we have around the organization would be the best way to find out more about the NFC technologies and what we're doing.
Terrific. I will put the link in the show notes to make the access a little bit easier.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. It has been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it's likewise. A real pleasure.
Can't wait to see what the NFC forum will come up with next.
All right. Well, likewise, Ruth. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Yep, cheers.
This was Avnet Silicast We Talk IoT. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a rating. Talk to you soon. Mm-hmm.